You're listening to KX93.5 FM.
FM 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's time for the Friendship Show.
Friendship Show.
With your hosts, Dawn Price, Mark Miller, and Scott Hayes. The Friendship Show.
Friendship Show.
Friendship Show.
And you're listening to KX93.5, if you didn't know. You're listening to KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. I'm Scott Hayes, and this is The Friendship Show. Our topic this morning, I'm just going to roll right into this, if that's okay. The topic this morning is permanent supportive housing, and we have a full house of people. And I'm getting a little feedback on the mic. Are we good? Yeah. We have a full house of people in here, but I want to kind of go around the room. I'm going to start with Mark Miller. And Mark is Friendship Shelter's Associate Executive Director, and he's been with the organization since 2005. He's been leading Friendship Shelter's efforts to establish permanent supportive housing, representing the shelter on several countywide committees, and participating in the 100,000 Homes Orange County Boot Camp last fall. Good morning, Mark. How are you, sir?
Good morning.
And actually, it's nice to see you back. We haven't seen you for a couple of weeks, or at least I haven't, so it's good to see you. Yeah, it's good to see you, my friend. So, can you define for the listeners the concept of this permanent supporting housing program and how this came to Laguna Beach?
Sure. Permanent supportive housing is first permanent. It's housing that formerly homeless people can move into, and then they're able to remain in that housing for as long as they wish. It's not a transitional program. It's not an emergency situation. The housing is permanent. The second part of it is supportive. And this is what separates this type of housing from many other sorts of housing initiatives, meaning that not only does the person receive housing in these kinds of programs, but they also receive wraparound supportive services that make it possible for that person to remain in that housing successfully, because all of the services they would need, all of the support they would need from the community is provided with the housing.
Beautiful, yeah. You attended the 100,000 Homes Orange County Boot Camp, right?
Yes.
And what was the one takeaway you got from that? What did you learn about sort of this sort of platform?
I think for me the big takeaway was, one, this is possible. I think the change nationally and in our community has been that it's not enough and it's not effective or efficient to try and manage homelessness or make homelessness more tolerable. The goal needs to be to end homelessness, and the solution to that is to develop and provide the appropriate housing for the people who need it.
Beautiful, Mark. Thank you. Also in the studio, we have Dawn Price. Good morning, Dawn.
Good morning.
Nice to see you always. Dawn is a Friendship Shelter's executive director. She joined the shelter in 2008 after 25 years of communication and executive leadership roles in various nonprofit organizations in Iowa and Texas. Dawn's been active on several committees for Orange County's 10-year plan to end homelessness, and she has been Friendship Shelter's chief advocate for the permanent supportive housing proposal.
That's right.
Very impressive, Dawn. Thank you for being here as always.
You're welcome.
So from the Friendship Shelter's perspective, yeah, what's sort of the strategic action plan here, and how is this going to go about saving money for the city?
You know, this predated me, really, in terms of my coming on to the organization in 2008. And just prior to that, the city of Laguna Beach had had two task forces that the city council had pulled together on the issue of homelessness and looking to try to make a community-wide decision about how we were going to address homelessness. And in both of those task forces, housing and permanent supportive housing was part of, I think, 14 recommendations in the first task force and I think 10 in the second. So,
what do you mean by that, 14 recommendations?
That these 10? Task forces, very smart people. Helen, who's going to talk with us later, came and advised them. So a group of concerned community people who looked at the issues of homelessness in our community and came up with a series of recommendations for the city to undertake in order to address homelessness. Officer Jason Ferris, who's been on this program,
yeah,
and great friend of Friendship Shelter and of our homeless community, his position was a part of those recommendations, and on and on and on, lots of things that changed in our community because of that. So our organization, Friendship Shelter, was aware of these recommendations, and we were looking at permanent supportive housing as part of that. I came in 08. In late 08, we had the ACLU lawsuit. We had lots of activity and quick activity in our community for to respond to that lawsuit and to kind of speed up some of the things that were occurring as a result of that. And one of those things that came very quickly then was the emergency shelter program, the ASL, the alternative sleeping location that we operate. So that's right. When Friendship Shelter got very involved. But always before that, we've worked with mentally ill people. We've seen that they are the people who get stuck in our programs without a solution because there's not enough supportive housing for them. It's very clear when you run an open door program that takes all different kinds of people. It's like a big Harry Potter sorting room. And you end up with the people who can very easily, with support, and I don't mean to undermine, understate how hard it is for them, but relatively easily get a job, start saving money, and get back out in the community with the support that someplace like Friendship Shelter provides. That can happen in 3 to 4 months. And then you have other groups that are special needs that have special housing options. Seniors have some housing options, things like that. Very quickly then, as you do that work, you end up with this group that is so disabled that they need support. And that's why Friendship Shelter then set as a strategic goal and priority, and therefore my job description as executive director, to get a permanent supportive housing established.
So, I mean, can you define sort of this strategy? What is that? How can listeners visualize what we're talking about here?
Well, what we're talking about is a person typically who has been homeless for either a consecutive year or more, or 3 episodes of homelessness in the past 2 years, someone who is really seriously disabled by the conditions that led to their homelessness. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about providing a permanent home for that person with services on site or coming into the home on a regular basis to help them remain safely housed, mm-hmm. and to help them hopefully as they meet those basic needs on that Maslow's hierarchy of needs that we all learned about in junior high school. Once they meet their housing and food needs, they can begin to look at the quality of their life. They can begin to look at addressing mental health, addressing addiction, and we're really excited about bringing that model.
Mark, I want to bring you back just briefly here. You've been sort of out there looking for permanent housing solutions, have you not?
Yes.
And you've found a few.
Well, this is, we have a couple of housing initiatives that we're working on. So on another front, we've been trying to establish what we call scattered site housing. So mm-hmm. we're looking at the same chronically homeless disabled population, but who could be more easily integrated into a community setting. And as a matter of fact, I just talked with the executive director yesterday. We thought it would take 6 months to establish 9 apartments and house 18 people. And yesterday, we finished signing the 9th apartment already.
Wow.
in the first 3 months. So that program has gone incredibly quickly and much smoother than any of us had anticipated.
So these are 9 apartments?
Yes, these are 9 2-bedroom, 2-bath apartments scattered throughout Southern Orange County.
18 people now homeless are permanently housed.
Yes.
Excellent. And then there, Stan?
Yeah, and that's... We're so pleased with that as an organization to begin right. that work. But what's left are people who can't live in mm-hmm. a scattered site apartment, who can't live with a roommate, who really need an efficiency-style apartment and on-site services. And that's why this particular program and proposal is so important to us. This proposal will be on the site where the ASL is in the canyon.
There you go.
It will be 40 apartment efficiency-style apartments with on-site services, with a manager's unit, and a built-in ASL. It will save the city, because the ASL is built in, it will save the city $150,000 a year in costs that it has right now, direct costs that will be saved. And it will house 40 people who currently are on our streets, in our parks, on our beaches, in front of our businesses, and not safe.
Yeah. Mark, you wanted to add something?
One of the things, Scott, that we did take away from the 100,000 Homes campaign that has been sort of an eye-opener and very important to us is the establishment of a vulnerability index. All of the clients that we interview for any of our permanent housing sites, we do a vulnerability index to see, frankly, how at risk are they of having some great harm to them, come to them as a result of their homelessness. This project in the canyon is something that's very exciting to our organization because this gets to the highest people in the vulnerability index, people who need to live privately and need to have their services on site. That's how compromised they are.
And do you have any sense of how many people will be applying for one of these units if and when?
You know, I think that is a great segue because this is where our expertise ends.
Okay.
You know, we are a homeless services organization. We've been helping homeless people for 26 years. We feel really good about the work we're doing with our scattered site. When it comes to building a building and establishing all the funding for that and understanding the process of leasing up that building, we had to turn to experts beyond our organization. And we did that by turning to, first, to our good friend and supporter and trustee, Bill Witte, who's been very supportive of us over these years and has expertise with his business. And he, in turn, introduced us to Jamboree Housing. Which is our development. Jamboree has become our development partner in this project, and mm-hmm. we have some people here from Jamboree.
We do. So let me first introduce Laura, and forgive me if I mispronounce your last name, Archuleta.
Got it.
Right on. Huh? Is the president of Jamboree Housing, and Laura had joined Jamboree in 1999 as an assistant director before assuming the responsibilities of president in 2001. And she has held positions in the public sector, including the cities of Garden Grove, Anaheim, Cypress, and Palmdale, as an advocate for the development and preservation of affordable homes throughout California. How'd I do, Laura?
Very good, and great Archuleta.
Archuleta.
Yeah, very good.
So I guess my question for you is, what exactly is Jamboree Housing, and what's your involvement in the development program that we're talking about here?
Great. Well, just to give you a little bit of background on Jamboree, we are a 24-year-old nonprofit located right here in Orange County. Our headquarters are in Irvine, California, and we have been fortunate to be able to develop and acquire, renovate, and provide services for about 7,000 units throughout the state of California. Over 17,000 people in California live in one of our properties.
Wow.
And so, it's really, really exciting that we actually were started right here in Orange County and continue to have our corporate headquarters here. And we do all types of housing. So we do straight kind of workforce, what we call the plain vanilla housing that needs to be affordable for our core workforce here in California. And we do senior housing. And just within the last 5 years or so, we've started getting into special needs housing. And so our goal at Jamboree is that 10% of everything we develop will have a special needs component as part of that. And permanent supportive housing is the way to go. We see that at different levels. And I think that Dawn did a good job of talking about you can't group everybody all together into one need. And so we have a variety of level of services. We have some set aside units for folks who are living with mental health issues or who've been chronically homeless at some of our larger developments. And then we have some standalone developments that are 100% for special needs population that have more intense services being brought in on site. About 3 years ago or so, we were fortunate to merge with another Orange County-based nonprofit called HOMES, which stands for Helping Our Mentally Ill Experience Success. And with that, we brought in some great expertise to help us better understand if we were going to build it. We'd been builders for a while, but if we were going to build it, what's the best way to provide services for the residents who are going to be living at our properties? And what was interesting is when our board of directors, because we are a 501c3 nonprofit, and when we went to our board of directors and we had the discussion about starting to serve a more vulnerable population, some of our board members were really nervous about that because it is different. It's different than serving the very low or the lower income workforce. And when we went out to our properties to really look, you realized that at our properties already, we had folks living with mental illness. We had very frail elderly. We had developmentally disabled residents already living in our property. So expanding into this area wasn't as much as a jump as we thought it would be. It was just actually doing it better by bringing in some expertise with people that really knew how to improve the quality of life for our existing residents and then also for our new residents.
So, I mean, for the listeners who may not be clear, because we're throwing out a lot of information here, what is your role exactly in the process here?
Yeah, so our role is to support really the Friendship Shelter as they move into this expansion, as they move into permanent supportive housing in any way we can. And I think specifically as we move forward in this development really gets defined, it's working on the hard kind of development tasks. So working with all of the consultants that put together the plans, the designs, the engineering, and then the next complicated layering that comes into making these types of transaction work is the financing. And the financing so specific in affordable housing, and then even more specific in permanent supportive housing. And that's where we've been able to build up some expertise by the development that we've done throughout the state. And so that's why it's a perfect partnership with the Friendship Shelter also, because they're grounded right here in the community. And although we're in Orange County, we have one development that we've worked on here in Laguna Beach, Alice Court, but it's been some years. And so to come back now and find a partner like this is really a perfect partnership where we're both bringing different skills to the table.
Beautiful. And very quick question, is there anything unique about this project compared to the other projects that you've consulted on or worked on in the past?
Well, you know, it is unique. I mean, well, first off, I would say, although we've worked in over 50 communities, every community really is different. But Laguna Beach, as we all know, it's really, really unique. And as I drove through the community this morning and looked around, you know, it just jumps out to you how across the country, how unique Laguna Beach is. And so I think having a very, very strong understanding of the design, the high quality design that's needed to fit into this community mm-hmm. is really, really important. An understanding of where we'll be building and the natural surroundings and making sure that we fit into that. And then that's, I would say, if Jamboree, one of the things I think we're best known for is our high quality development, and that we're not a cookie cutter, one size fits all. Oftentimes you'll have groups come in and want to build the highest density, the tallest building that can really impose in a community. We're really about fitting into that neighborhood, fitting into that feel, making sure that we're a fit. And I'd say our mission as a nonprofit is a little bit different than others. Our mission is to actually improve communities. That's our strongest stand, to improve communities through the development of housing that's affordable and the implementation of impactful resident services. So that's a little bit different twist. We're not here just to get something developed and move on.
Beautiful. Let me introduce Bill Witte, is the president and managing partner of Related California, one of the largest developers of urban and multifamily housing in the state. Prior to joining the Related companies in May of 1989, Bill served as deputy mayor for housing and neighborhoods under Mayor Art Agnos in San Francisco, where he oversaw all housing development and redevelopment activities for the city. And from 1981 to 1988 as Director of Housing and Economic Development under Mayor Dianne Feinstein. Very impressive resume there, sir. Thank you for coming in this morning.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I guess my question for you, you've worked on a number of similar projects to the one we're discussing here this morning. And I guess we should probably be clear that the money somehow is coming from outside Laguna Beach and into the community of Laguna Beach to solve a community problem. And maybe people have a hard time getting their heads around that concept. I wonder if you could help explain that a little.
Well, first of all, I look at this project as both a resident of Laguna Beach and, like Laura, as a developer who's done similar projects. And I think the marriage of a mission-driven organization that I'm very familiar with, Friendship Shelter, have seen how successful they've been in kind of turning around lives here in the Friendship Shelter program, with an experienced developer of affordable housing like Jamboree, who is also close by, is, I think, a perfect marriage. And to your point about bringing in other funding, I mean, not only, as Dawn said earlier, does this save the city of Laguna Beach money in operating and other costs related to homeless services, but as Laura, I think, touched on, the financing to enable the development of a project like this includes a variety of sources, most of them private, interestingly, through private lending and the sale of federal low-income housing tax credits to very large companies, usually banks or insurance companies. So you're leveraging a lot of outside resources and saving the city money at the same time. And when you combine that with the marriage of, as I said earlier, the sort of successful local mission-driven organization like Friendship Shelter and an experienced local developer of affordable housing who has the ongoing responsibility to make sure not only that this gets designed, built, and financed, but gets run efficiently and professionally, I think that's when something like this really works well.
So we're going to take a short musical break, but before we do, explain it to me like I'm a child, because sometimes my thinking is much like a child. How does this actually save the city money, I guess would be my first question. And then my follow-up question would be, that money that's coming in from these outside sources, that's money you still have to go after? Or is that just available and accessible for this type of program or project?
Okay, well, 2 points, as you suggest. On the saving the city money, I think Dawn spoke to that earlier. Right now, the city is compelled, I think, or obliged to spend a variety of resources on dealing with the existing homeless population. But as I think Dawn and Mark pointed out, it's not part of really an ongoing solution. It's kind of treading water. The permanent supportive housing solution deals with this, as Mark said, on a more permanent way. The financing is really not that, well, to us in the business, I say it's not that complicated. It is kind of complicated, but simply put, there's usually two or three components. First, there is some private lender participation that usually accounts for 20-30% of the total cost of development, supported by the rents and any income generated by the project, which is affordable, so it's limited. The second and biggest component is from selling these federal low-income tax credits to very large corporations who get nothing but tax benefits for doing so. It's a 25-year-old program, very successful, and so the investors could be Bank of America or Wells Fargo Bank, a very well-known established commodity. You have a stake in making sure that this works well. And then the third component sometimes is funding from the County of Orange or some other public source that really completes the gap, if you will, in raising the funds necessary to build the development. So in that way, usually, in this case, you're getting virtually all the money from outside the city of Laguna Beach.
Beautiful. Well explained, too, by the way. Thank you very much.
And just to reiterate,
yeah, please.
The actual savings to the city by bringing the ASL into a building rather than renting those construction trailers we're using currently is $150,000 a year. So that's just straight cash savings to the city.
Beautiful. We're going to take a short musical break. April, we're going to hear, I believe, Elvis Presley's There's No Place Like Home. You're listening to KX 93.5, Laguna's Only FM. This is the Friendship Show, and we will be back in about a minute and 30. April, take us out of here.
Is there no place like home?
place like home. Well, now I say home, home, sweet home.
You're listening to KX93.5, Laguna's Only FM. I'm Scott Hayes, and this is the Friendship Show. And this morning we're talking about permanent supportive housing, and we've got a panel of esteemed individuals here who are experts in their particular fields. And let me come back to a couple of things here. Laura, I want to come back to you for a moment. This is Laura Archuleta, and president of Jamboree Housing and an advocate for the development and preservation of affordable homes throughout California. There's been discussion recently about the cost to build this particular facility in the canyon. Different numbers have been reported in the newspapers and various media sources. Can you explain some of the cost factors involved, and so listeners have a better sense of the type of development we're talking about here?
Well, sure. So we're very early in our preliminary designs. And initially, when we put some numbers to the project, we thought we'd be in about the $13 million range. And as we continue to refine that design, work with the city, work with the community, right now we're just a little bit under $11 million in our total estimates. And we anticipate, we hope, that we'll be able to continue to value engineer that down a bit. But I will tell you, as I mentioned earlier, we're talking about building a very high-quality development that fits into the community, that is totally sustainable for as long as it's there. I mean, that's really where the city's going to get their savings of their $150,000 a year. Think about, we're building it to be there permanent. So this will include the 40 units of permanent supportive housing, a manager's unit, but will also then incorporate the night beds, the ASL beds that are there right now. So that's really exciting. So when you look at the total development cost, you're incorporating the ASL housing beds that are there now, the 40 units of permanent housing, along with some funding going into the actual services that will be provided on site.
The ASL, Don Price, you know, Executive Director of Friendship Shelter, the ASL will remain?
The ASL will remain.
Okay.
Our numbers show us, we have now almost 5 years of statistics on that property, and I'm a statistics-driven person, so that really speaks to me. What we see when we look at those numbers is, I'll give you last year for an example, 326 different people spent at least one night at the ASL emergency shelter. But most of them spent only 1 to 5 nights. It's a transient population. We're a coastal community. People drift in and drift out of this community, whether they are homeless or not. That's kind of our DNA as an organ, as a community, as a city. Last year, 326 different people, but 44 people used 70% of our resources, of our bed nights and of our services out there. So those are the folks. That's our sweet spot in terms of our the folks we hope to help with this proposal.
Some of those folks will end up.
We hope. Some of those folks, I mean, we will do our very best to get them first in line and help them become part of this development. They are our motivation, Friendship Shelter's motivation for doing this is that these are people who have been sleeping on a mat on a floor for 5 years, and that they're going to be there until we come up with a better solution.
Yeah. Laura, I want to come back to a follow-up question for you, if I may, and that is, what does this building look like? It is a one-story, is it a two-story, is it a high-rise? And you had mentioned high-quality, 40 units. High quality, I think of Ocean View, you know. I mean, what do you mean by high quality? And how big are these units?
Well, that's a great question. So, no, we're not going to be able to have ocean views at this site. It is not in a location with ocean views, but it is planned to be two stories with very, very detailed, incorporated design to make sure that the quality of life and the living environment there works. And there's been a lot of discussion going on about how will we separate the nightly beds, the nightly sleeping folks, from the permanent folks and those services. We're still in those discussions. But we anticipate the units to be about 400 square feet, sorry. So a little bit larger than what you see, I think, at Alice Court. I think
it's
those...
Yeah,
okay, so about 400 units. We do have some developments throughout California. We actually have a development in Sacramento that houses single folks, and they're smaller than that. So so this is a good size unit for the residents, and just a lot of thought going into and between Friendship Shelter and Jamboree on how to incorporate the living and the services, because that is new. That's new to us, and that's new to the Friendship Shelter.
Right.
But very exciting.
Very nice. Bill Witte, let me reintroduce you, Bill, if I may. President, Managing Partner of Related California, one of the largest developers of urban and multifamily housing in the state, and an early advisory of Friendship Shelter and its platform here. Bill, you had something to say to that point?
Well, Laura mentioned Alice Court, a 27-unit affordable housing development that Jamboree and our company did together a few years back on Glen Eyrie, right opposite the parking garage. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of questions like this when we were planning that. The quality, affordable housing, right in the middle of downtown, you know, what's that going to do? You don't hear those questions anymore.
Why not?
Because drive by and look at that. First of all, you won't know that it's affordable housing. It is the same size units, interestingly, 400 square foot studios serving people at 40% of the median income for the county, so definitely targeted in an affordable way. But it has an attention to detail and a quality that you're going to see in this development. It doesn't read, look, or feel like affordable housing, and yet it performs the services that Laura just described that are necessary to make this successful. So as we view these as positive additions to the community, not things that, you know, you kind of have to wince as you look at. They really are of high quality, and again, they stand the test of time.
Beautiful, yeah. Helen, actually, if you come in early, you actually get to speak on the radio, Helen. So
okay.
I apologize for coming to you last. But Helen Cameron is also with Jamboree Housing. She joined Homes, Inc., Orange County's first and oldest permanent supportive housing provider, around 1999, if I got that right.
Right.
The two companies have since merged, as Laura pointed out. Homes established housing for 140 individuals and six private homes and two apartment communities. You were asked to advise Laguna's task force on homelessness in 2007 and 2009. You were also part of the group that wrote Orange County's 10-year plan to end homelessness. We've got a plethora of individuals with some great knowledge in this room this morning. Jamboree Housing and Homes, can you speak to some of your successes?
Yeah, I'd love to. And in fact, part of the reason that Homes became affiliated with Jamboree was because we did Orange County's first program in a city in Orange County for chronically homeless folks who had a mental health diagnosis. Mm-hmm. We did this in Anaheim. It was the second development of its type that Homes had done. 10 years ago, we completed Orange County's first supportive housing program for homeless folks with a mental health diagnosis in Midway City. And we chose carefully a county location so that we would be able to show what we were able to provide. 10 years later, we've had a huge success. The stability of these residents, I think, has leveled everybody's expectation of what was possible. Many of them have lived, well, in fact, we have four residents who moved in 10 years ago, and they're still living there. And by serious mental illness, I'm describing someone who has either schizophrenia or bipolar or severe depression as their typical diagnosis. So these are people who were coming from homelessness, not unlike the population that Dawn's described as living at the ASL, spending their night on the floor on a mat. So we have a very significant success record of housing those folk.
This facility in Midway City.
We don't describe it as a facility, by the way. It's an apartment community.
This apartment community in Midway City.
Right.
How many people does it currently
have? It has 29 units and a property manager's unit on site.
And this has been around for 10 years.
10 years
and
in Orange
10
County.
Years ago, that was completely filled with
people
capacity.
Who were homeless with mental illness. Not all of them remain there. Some of them transitioned with their own Section 8 voucher, which is part of the funding for these programs that we'll talk about a little bit more. In Anaheim, when Jamboree and Homes collaborated on a Diamond apartment home community, that's been open for about 5 years. And again, a similar population. Beautiful apartment communities. And just to give you an example of the quality, it is an apartment community where there's a front door is you have to have access through the manager's unit or through an apartment owner. We have people knocking on the front door, driving past, who want to move in. It definitely looks like the surrounding yeah. community. And then our most recent supportive housing is a new model, I think, in Orange County, where we have integrated this population that we specialize in, the special needs population, into an apartment community in Irvine. And we recently opened the second phase, where we have 72 apartments in Irvine, and 10 of them are for individuals and families, again, with the same homelessness and mental illness criteria to enter that community. So we now have 20 people in Irvine in individual apartments.
Can you speak at all to how this permanent housing solution changes the lives of the residents who stay there?
Well, the residents themselves speak very loudly about that. They would say that it's changed their lives. Mm-hmm. We have an expectation that people who move into this kind of housing don't just sit there and receive that opportunity, that they become active participants in their communities. So we expect people to be doing an average of 20 hours a week of either part-time work, going to school, being involved in volunteer activities, mental health programming. So there is an expectation that you are an active participant in that community, and you could meet many of our residents and you would not know from anybody in this room that they had a mental health diagnosis and that they had formerly been homeless.
Excellent. Beautiful. Don, Executive Director of Friendship Shelter, where are we in the process with this program?
Well, this is...
What's next?
Yeah, this is... I'm grateful that we have this hour to kind of get all of this important information, and it's a hard program to wrap your arms around, and this really helps us do that. And we'll put this podcast up on, we've created a website, friendsofsupportivehousing.org, where we're housing all of our advocacy and information about this proposal. It is a proposal. It's a conceptual proposal at this point. The city used an unusual step in asking us to place conceptual story poles or stakes up at the site so that as the community has the conversation about this proposal, they have a sense of, a broad sense of the breadth of the mass that we're talking about in terms of this building. So when people see stakes up there, those aren't design review stakes. Secret plan where we've got exactly, you know, where the bathrooms are going to go and where the hallways are going to be. It's more about this is the mass we envision, and we wanted the community and the city, it was very important to the city that the community understand what we're talking about in terms of mass. So those story polls have gone up, and that was at the shared expense of Jamboree and the city, so that was a collaborative effort there. And then the city has invited Jamboree and Friendship Shelter to make a proposal at its April 22nd City Council meeting to present our proposal to the City Council. And we hope that people who support the program will come in and lend their support. If you want to learn more, again, that website is just critical, friendsofsupportivehousing.org. And we'll be having some meetings this Friday at Neighborhood Congregational Church at 7 o'clock on Friday the 11th. They have asked us to be present for a town meeting sort of thing, and so we'll pull some people together and be there to answer questions just as we've done here today. But we've had very, very positive feedback from the community. I think all of us who went through the ASL approval process expected, frankly, a little bit more pushback than I'm hearing. I think people understand the ASL was a controversy that ended up solving a problem, and we gained some trust. The city gained some trust, and Friendship Shelter gained some trust. We have an incredible partner in Jamboree; they bring a lot of trust, and so we've actually had mostly very positive conversations. There's misconceptions and things I think we should clear up in the remaining time, but it's been a very positive process thus far.
Any projected, I mean, I know that, you know, projections are basically worth nothing, but if this process moves at a steady pace, any projections in terms of when the actual housing of individuals would begin?
I would ask our development partner what they think. If we get through approvals, we're talking, we've asked the city for a three-year period exclusive right to develop on the property. That is what we hope will be the outcome of the April 22nd meeting, that we would ask the City Council to direct its staff to draft that MOU. And that's really when it begins, right, Laura? The development process would begin.
I think our hope would be that by mid-year next year, latest maybe the end of 2015, that we would have all of our financing in place, public, private, you know, all lined up and be prepared to break ground with about a 1 year until folks could move in from there. So I know that it's a bit of a ways out there, and we really appreciate all the listeners sticking with us as we go through the process. It's not easy, but what you will have, again, will be there permanent, and it'll be such a gem for the community. So it's worth putting the time in, even though it's still a couple years out.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is part of that financing, and Laura spoke to where we are in terms of what we think the cost is going to be. We expect there will be a capital campaign that Friendship Shelter will need to undertake as part of that financing. So that needs to happen in that time frame that Laura mentioned as well.
Well, I know that there are some concerns out there, so we're going to take a very short musical break, catch our breaths, come back, and address some of the community issues that may surface in the near future regarding this particular program. April, you want to lead us out with some music, please?
Something I couldn't replace. I was running away from the only thing I've ever known. Like a blind dog without a bone, I was a gypsy lost in the twilight zone. I hijacked a rainbow and crashed into a pot of gold. I've been there, done that, I ain't looking back. Seeds I've sown, saving times, spending too much time on the telephone. He says you can't go home. Who says you can't go home? There's only one place, they call me one of their own. Just a hometown boy, born a rolling stone. He says you can't go home. Who says you can't go back? Been all around the world.
Listening to KX93.5, Laguna's only FM radio station. I'm Scott Hayes, and this is the Friendship Show. And this morning, we're talking about the permanent supportive housing solution in Laguna Beach. And we have a esteemed group of guests this morning. There are a few questions that we haven't quite addressed yet. And this seems like a really good time to ask a couple of questions. And these are, I guess, legitimate concerns of community members who want answers to some of their questions. I guess one of them may be that some people have concerns about the potential that housing this particular group of individuals may increase drug use or other illegal activities in the neighborhood. Is there anyone in particular that would like to address this issue for us?
Well, we're talking about permanent housing and housing people who are at the lowest vulnerability or the highest vulnerability. So we want to get at people who have or who are disabled by their use of drugs and alcohol and their addictions. However, this anyone who lives in any apartment anywhere, including ours, needs to follow the law. And so while people may come in and initially be disabled partly by their addiction, what good research shows, and I think Helen can speak to, is that just by housing people and providing some security, there's great what we call the jargon is harm reduction. People get better because they can get better, because they've met their basic needs. And so, Helen, you're much more of an expert on this than I am.
Well, let me read it. Helen Cameron is with Jamboree Housing, so I wanted to get that in, Helen.
Right, and we, as we talked about earlier, have a number of developments where and communities where people who have exactly this kind of issue, what is referred to as dual diagnosis, often people who have a mental health diagnosis are not receiving medication, especially if they're living under a tree or under a bridge. So they don't have that ability to access other than maybe illegal substances and alcohol. So when they have an ability to be housed and they are connected with case managers and service providers who know how to help them deal with those issues, then they have an ability to receive appropriate medication. And we often joke, they have much better medication than we have in terms of illegal substances. So their symptoms can be much better managed through appropriate medication and therapy and support. So we don't typically find that substance abuse continues to be a problem. And if someone is still consuming in the privacy of their own unit and it does not impact anybody else in the community, how would we even know?
Right.
So I think it comes down to if it doesn't impact the neighborhood and their surrounding roommates or neighbors in that community, then we have no reason to really deal with it. If they violate their lease, then they're held accountable, just as anybody else is in an apartment community.
You know, I think that question, you know, it kind of goes to people's worst fears that this is going to be some, you know, drug den, or this is going to be some, you know, free-for-all for a bunch of alcoholics. We, in our current permanent supportive housing scattered site program, we have been, for the first time, and Mark can speak to this as well, we've been for the first time qualifying people for these units. And we know that HUD would allow the disabling condition of an addiction as the disabling condition when someone moves in. We haven't found it. When we see people who have serious addiction issues, there's always been, in our experience, in Friendship Shelter's experience, and I don't know if Helen's seen the same thing, an underlying co-occurring mental health issue that really has exacerbated that addiction. And so we don't anticipate or see people that are just going to be qualifying for these apartments solely on that basis. However, the other really cool thing about this site is just steps away is the Canyon Club, which is a very unique facility, strictly housing 12-step meetings all day long. And so when someone in this apartment community gets better and says, I think I'm ready to address this alcohol addiction, I think I'm ready to address this drug addiction, they can literally walk half a block, maybe less, up the canyon and attend 12-step programs all day.
Yeah.
For free.
And as we've pointed out, there's management on site.
Right.
To help sort of deal with these issues when they do surface, yes. But if it's permanent, is it permanent? Or are there times when perhaps somebody oversteps the boundaries in a community and things need to be adjusted?
Well, by permanent, I think we mean that people have that ability to stay. In Orange County, we have many programs that don't have that ability. So we mean they will sign a lease. They will have the ability to live there permanently as long as they can pay their rent. And we didn't really talk about the rent, but our typical resident in our permanent supportive housing is on a disability income, which is about $850 a month. So they are, as part of this proposal, we would be looking to get rental subsidies for these folks because they can't afford to pay market rent. So they'll be paying no more than 30% of their income.
Helen, can I just ask, Helen, if you or someone from Jamboree knows, given that there are responsibilities on both sides of the lease, you know, us as the landlord and the tenants coming in, with permanent supportive housing, what is the success rate in your programs?
Well, our particular success rate, we were just comparing it, in fact, at a county meeting this week, and at our Diamond Apartment Homes in Anaheim, the county's objective to retain stability is 50% of the residents. We have 98% stability. Beautiful. And that's because we have not only the housing, but we have on-site support and access to case management.
Nice. Last question. We're down to the last minute here. There's also probably concern in the community that this type of complex housing community, apartment community, may attract other homeless individuals from outside to come in and utilize these various services. We've got about 30 seconds. Who feels?
Every community has this concern. I've been at so many meetings where Fullerton has said, if we build it, they will come.
Yeah.
We don't see this as being a reality.
Bill Witte, President, Managing Partner of Related California.
First of all, there will be 40 units. Those will be fully occupied. There's not 400 units. There's 40. There may be a need countywide for far more. We've never seen what you just described occur because even homeless people understand there's either vacancy or there's not.
Very nice. And don't yell at me, Bill. I didn't deserve that.
I think also the point about this magnet theory is that the ASL, everyone thought that would be a magnet.
Yeah.
We have no more homeless people in Laguna Beach now, 5 years later, than we did when we opened the ASL. If we are a magnet next week when the 200-bed emergency shelters would close in Fullerton and Santa Ana because they're cold weather shelters, we should have 400 people coming to Laguna Beach next week to the ASL. We won't. We never do. We're not a magnet.
Excellent. Okay, you've been listening to KX93.5 Laguna's Only FM. I'm Scott Hayes. This is the Friendship Show. And April, take us out of here with a little music, please.
You've been listening to The Friendship Show on KX93.5 FM. Join us every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. for great conversation, great music, and the chance to make great new friends. The Friendship Show on KX93.5, Laguna's Only FM.